Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Thursday, January 9, 2025. U.S. President Joe Biden remembers former President Jimmy Carter.
What I find extraordinary about Jimmy Carter, though, is that millions of people all over the world, feel they lost a friend as well, even though they never met him. And that's because Jimmy Carter lived a life measured not by words, but by his deeds. Just look at his life, his life's work. He worked to eradicate disease, not just at home, but around the world.
And a South Sudanese analyst remembers the words of Jimmy Carter after South Sudan gained its independence from Sudan.
Thank God you have arrived. Now the ball is in your court for you to make of South Sudan what you have always yearned for. A lot of people across the world have not taken time to think in such terms where you bring yourself down from mighty political status to wanting the lives of everyday people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Thursday is a national day of mourning in the United States for the passing of former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, with the government shutdown and top officials gathering at the majestic Washington National Cathedral for a state funeral for the country's 39th president. Carter, who died last week at the age of 100, as the oldest ever former president, often disdained the political formalities of Washington governance. But all five of his living presidential successors, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden, are attending the funeral, with Biden delivering eulogy. Mourners from the public have paid their final respects as Carter, in a flag-draped casket, has lain in the state at the U.S. Capitol since Tuesday. After the funeral, Carter will be flown back to his southern home, state of Georgia, where he will be entered in a family plot next to Rosalynn Carter, his wife of 77 years, who died in late 2023. The tributes to Carter have lasted a week, with many noting how he rose to power from a humble beginning as a peanut farmer to preside as a president from 1977 to 1981, during a difficult time as U.S. was looking to recover from the Watergate political scandal and its military defeat in Vietnam War. Carter, a Democrat, negotiated the Camp David Accords, a peace treaty between Egypt and Israel, lost his 1980 re-election bid to Republican Ronald Reagan in a landslide defeat, but later emerged in a post-presidential life as a celebrated humanitarian. He was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2002 for his long efforts to negotiate peaceful settlements to the world conflicts. In declaring the National Day of Mourning, Biden called Jimmy Carter a man of character, courage, and compassion. A South Sudanese analyst and co-founder of the SAD Institute says Jimmy Carter Foundation saved lives in South Sudan during a difficult time. Jock Madud Jock says the people of South Sudan will remain grateful to Jimmy Carter.
Former President Jimmy Carter is a man who has so much love in South Sudan and has filled the hearts and minds of the people of South Sudan through hard times. During the war, it was the Carter Center that championed the fight against guinea worm and river blindness, and contributed to other efforts politically, including the participation in the referendum and in 2009, and then the elections 2010, and then the celebration of independence. Now, as somebody who has interacted very closely with the Carter Center, I can only just imagine all those thousands and millions of South Sudanese who were on the verge of being crippled by Guinea worm had it not been for the Carter Center installing boreholes everywhere throughout the country in order for people to have clean water so that they don't have to drink from streams and from pools where that were infested by guinea worm.
Talk to us about river blindness. It's my understanding that the Carter Center was also fighting river blindness in most remote parts of South Sudan. I remember traveling to Terekeka with a project that is looking at river blindness, and I saw people there. I mean, it broke my heart.
Absolutely. If you went to a place along the river in between Tonj and Wau, or in Busere, in south of Wau town, or other places in Equatoria, you saw lines and lines of blind people guiding one another with the sticks, and villages were sometimes totally blinded. And the Carter Center, first of all, contributed to the efforts to treat people who were already affected, but to also prevent further infections by enlightening people. There was a lot of education about how you get river blindness, and contributed a great deal of medication. There is one medicine called ivermectin, which the Carter Center was giving out all across South Sudan. And I think of all the efforts, humanitarian efforts that have been offered to South Sudanese, the Carter Center did its job with the most passion and the most love for the people. No qualms, no political judgment, nothing, just service to humanity. And I think a lot of South Sudanese remember these days, the days of darkness, when nobody else was willing to venture into such things. Now, I went to Carter Center myself in Atlanta and interacted with President Jimmy Carter, and the most humane person I have ever met was this elderly statesman who went down really in health while fighting for the welfare of others. There is no word that can capture the contribution of Jimmy Carter to South Sudan.
World leaders are sending their messages of condolences. The government of South Sudan is mute, and this is a man who literally fought for the independence of South Sudan. Do you know why the government is mute?
Well, I simply think that it is a lack of foresight. It is lack of reflection on our past, such that people like President Kiir himself would have remembered President Carter very vividly from his interactions with our leaders. And so for the government and the leadership of South Sudan to be silent on what is now a global mourning is a little odd and strange. And I think it is a result of people not being keeping up with their responsibilities on a global stage. Otherwise, Jimmy Carter is not a man who can be buried without condolences and without a word of appreciation from the people of South Sudan through their leaders.
You said you met him personally at the Carter Center in Atlanta. What reminds you of his legacy in South Sudan? I mean, apart from the humanitarian work that he has done, what reminds you of his legacy on the South Sudanese people?
Well, his words ring in my head when he told us, myself and a Sudanese diplomat who was going with us when we were trying to talk about what happens to the two Sudans post-independence of South Sudan. And he told us, he told me particularly, that me and Lualdeng was there, and other people were there. And he said, you people of South Sudan, you have come a long way. Now what is left is for you to fight fair and fight well. What he meant by fighting well was to focus on the issues and quit being antagonistic to one another on a personal level. He was telling us that any political dialogue, any political discourse, has to be civilized and has to be done in ways that regard the welfare of the state, despite the viciousness of the disagreements. The country is comes ahead of every individual or collective interest. And that's that you people of South Sudan have really traveled a long distance, and that thank God you have arrived, and now the ball is in your court for you to make of South Sudan what you have always yearned for. These words are not things that highly regarded, a lot of people across the world have not taken time to think in such such terms where you bring yourself down from mighty political status to wanting the lives of everyday people to be better. And so those words are still ringing in my head. I also remember President Carter by his generosity of always being attentive to everyone. When he's talking to you, he is a person who really, really listens and listens with his heart as much as he listened with his ears.
That's Jock Madu Jock, a South Sudanese analyst and a co-founder of the SART Institute. He spoke to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, via WhatsApp this past hour. Jimmy Carter and his non-profit, the Carter Center, led a decade-long campaign to eradicate guinea worm disease, which is a parasitic infection that causes painful blisters. In 2014, my colleague Yehia Wehub had the privilege of interviewing him regarding his work in trying to eradicate guinea worm disease from Africa.
Hello, this is Jimmy Carter.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
My name is Yehia Wehub, originally from Ethiopia.
Yes.
Right now I'm an international radio broadcaster here at The Voice of America.
It's good to talk to you.
It's an honor and a privilege talking to you, sir.
We depend on them overwhelmingly, particularly women volunteers. Right now we are concentrating on southern Sudan, which is going to be the last place with guinea worm, and we have about 12,000 volunteers now working for us, with about 100 employees, most of them Sudanese. So we depend heavily on women because they take care of the children. They're the ones that ordinarily go to the ponds to get water. And if we can educate the women about what causes the disease, that's the key to success. Yes, we use the same technique against a number of other diseases. That is to go into a village to convince the leaders that we're there to help them, to let them know that they have to do almost all the work. So we're not dealing with a number of other diseases ourselves. For instance, we're working on schistosomiasis. We're working on onchocerciasis, which is river blindness. We're working on trachoma. We're working on lymphatic filariasis, which is elephantiasis. And we also are working on malaria in some cases. But in all of those cases, we use the same technique that we did with guinea worm. That is to recruit as many of the leaders as possible, including the president of the country, the minister of health, the village chief, but also as many volunteers as we can. So the technique that we use on guinea worm basically is the same as we use on other diseases. Of course, all of them don't involve, you know, treatment of a pond water. Well, let me give you a couple of examples. In Ghana, this year, we've only had 8 cases. And last year, at the same time, we had 236 cases. So that's a tremendous reduction.
Big reduction.
Okay. In Mali, last year, we had 74 cases at this time in late August. 74 cases. Now we have 13 cases this year. So you see, that's a tremendous, that's an 82% reduction as well.
Yes.
In Ethiopia, we only have 15 cases left.
The work is almost done.
Almost done in those countries, but we still have almost 1,400 cases in Sudan. But we have very good control over those cases as well. So we're making very good progress in all 4 countries. And of course, the other 16 countries don't have any guinea worm left. We love your country, by the way.
Oh, Ethiopia?
Ethiopia.
All of Africa loves you anyway, but Ethiopia, you have a special place.
Well, I feel that way. Well,
yes.
Best wishes to you, and thank you again.
Thank you, sir.
Goodbye. One of the questions my colleague Yehia Wehub asked the president was, to what extent did he have to reach out to subgroups like women and local leaders in his campaign to eradicate guinea worm from Africa?
Nigeria's Ebonyi State long battled guinea worm disease. The crippling parasitic disease ravaged communities across the state. People contract the disease by drinking water infected with guinea worm larvae, which are often found in slow-moving water sources, such as ponds. Dr. John Nkoda is the former state coordinator of guinea worm eradication.
In Ebonyi, we had 13 local governments. All of them were affected. But 80% of the communities in the state were affected. When the case in the whole world was 3.6 million, and from that time, when Jimmy Carter joined, as one of the major partners in the program. It was launched in Nigeria in 1988. At the time, we had 303,000 cases in Nigeria. But the coming out to Ebonyi, that was very endemic. We had 100,000 cases.
Nkuda tells VOA that the Carter Foundation was key to eradicating the scourge.
When Jimmy Foundation came under the Global 2000 program, the Carter Foundation, so they came with a very big support. The support they rendered were mobilization, campaign, provision of intervention materials, eradication materials like provision of filters, provision of water. Collaborated with UNICEF to provide the adult wells to most of the endemic communities. So because the one now is gotten from pond water. So the main water supply in the state that then was pond water. So the intervention, they provided the filters to filter water before drinking.
He also says the Carter Foundation treated infected ponds to destroy the larvae that transmit the guinea worm. The foundation collaborated with UNICEF, the World Health Organization, and Nigeria's Yakubu Gowon Center in the fight. The WHO says the disease now nearly is eradicated worldwide, with just 14 human cases reported in 2023. Ebonyi State was certified guinea worm free in December 2013. Nkoda says the people of Ebonyi State were saddened when they heard the passing away of Jimmy Carter last month. He says the people have been paying tribute to the man who helped them eradicate guinea worm.
So when we had this passing away in the last 2024 or something last Sunday, it was pretty so bad. There have been comments from different patients, especially those that work with us in the Ministry of Health that time, who know his role, made a comment, including myself, about the passing away of Jimmy Carter. In fact, he made the effort to eradicate guinea worm, not only guinea worm, but other diseases in the world.
Nkuda says Nigerians will continue to remember Carter for his service to the people, especially the less privileged. He says Carter stood as a hero in guinea worm eradication. This is Mike Mbunye for VOA News in Lagos.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese holdout rebel groups have formed another group. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands. That is craft work, making the baskets and doing more of the clay artwork.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers. So for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice. So I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Four holdout rebel groups from South Sudan who have been negotiating with the government at the Tumaini Initiative talks in Nairobi have formed a new group called United People's Alliance. The group says they are working towards forming a united, peaceful, just and prosperous new Sudan for all its citizens, irrespective of clan, tribe, region, religion, or gender. We now go live to Nairobi to speak with Pagana Moon, the leader of the Real FPLM, who is believed to be the mastermind behind the new group. Pagan, good evening.
Good evening to you.
Talk to us about United People's Alliance. I mean, you went to Nairobi as summer. Now there is a new kid on the block called United People's Alliance. Talk to us about it.
Indeed, we, the SOMA, and SOMA is an alliance of a number of political organizations, and SUNA, South Sudan United National Alliance. These are two alliances plus NASRCC, National Salvation Front Revolutionary Council, Revolutionary Command Council, we have come together and we have decided to come together to consolidate our unity. And today, on the 9th of January, a very important day in our history, we commemorate the 20th anniversary of the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement today, and as well as also commemorating the 14th anniversary of the holding of the referendum on self-determination by the people of South Sudan, who determined their future and achieved their independence, which was declared on the 9th of July, 2011. We have come together to declare the United People's Alliance as an alliance of a number of political parties in the two alliances, plus the NAS Revolutionary Command Council. And we are coming together to intensify the struggle for peace and good governance in South Sudan and to rescue South Sudan.
Yeah, let's talk about the peace.
Yes.
It's our the South Sudanese people and the region at large were expecting you and the government delegation to resume the Tumaini talks on January 6th. Today is the 9th. Instead of talking about the resumption of talks, we are talking about a new group. Why? What is happening?
First, it is true that the parties have been invited by the mediators to resume the negotiations on the 6th of January. Unfortunately, and as usual, the government delegation did not show up, and that is a sign of lack of seriousness to bring peace to the country. This is not the first time. We waited for them several times, and they have not shown up. And this is another added sign that the government really is not serious about peace. If they were, they would have been here on the 6th. But today, the 9th of January, is a day that the people of South Sudan determined their future and decided to choose to be an independent, to build a state where they will live in peace and harmony among themselves and build a country that will restore their dignity and in which they will live in prosperity, creating wealth and sharing this wealth equitably among themselves as equal citizens. This dream has not been achieved, and today, while we are in search for peace, we have come together to intensify this struggle to bring this peace and also to move towards the realization of the dream of the people of South Sudan,
which they have decided
on the 9th of January, 2011.
Pagan, forgive me for interrupting you. The dreams of the people in South Sudan is peace. They want the Tumaini Initiative to wind up so that a new chapter is opened and people get back to, rebuilding their lives. But instead, we are seeing new groups being formed. And, this appears to be also a delayed tactics. You were saying the government is delaying coming to Nairobi and you guys are forming a new group. And this group might come up with new conditions which will delay the process.
This group that has united themselves, and unity is a very important value. It is actually a very important value that the people of South Sudan are searching for. We have to unite ourselves as South Sudanese. The opposition have to unite themselves. And we have to unite ourselves to strengthen our search for peace and our struggle for peace. That is why we are uniting ourselves. And in the face of the challenges that we are facing in the peace process, there is no any other way but to unite.
And when are the talks starting? And when are you starting the talks, rather?
We are in the venue of the talks. The government is not here. You can ask the government, when are they coming to the talks? They have been invited and they have not come.
Honorable Paganamun, thank you very much for talking to us about the United People's Alliance, a new umbrella group of four opposition groups that are negotiating at the Tumaini Initiative. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
That was Paganamun, leader of the Real SPLM, speaking to me in Nairobi. Chad's state media says an attack on presidential palace Wednesday night left 8 assailants dead and 6 in custody, with one soldier killed and 3 wounded. Officials blame the attack on disorganized local youth who were intoxicated by alcohol and drugs. Chadian Foreign Minister Abdurrahman Kolumala told state TV that it was probably not terrorism, adding that the situation is completely under control. Muki Edwin Kinzika has more from Cameroon.
Les forces de défense et de sécurité.
Chadian State TV said civilians should not be scared by the unusual presence of a huge number of government troops, tactical vehicles and armored cars in the capital city, N'Djamena, especially around the presidential palace. The message, broadcast several times Thursday, added that civilians should go about their daily activities without fear. However, 27-year-old food seller Maimuna Yebgi said the presence of government troops on the streets scares people. She says Chad should have sent troops to villages out of the city center where the armed gangs that attacked President Mahamat Idris Deby's palace may be hiding. She says she is sure that attackers who know government troops are looking for them couldn't be hiding in the city center several hours after the attack. Officials say the troops were deployed after a gang of 24 heavily armed assailants attacked the presidential palace on Wednesday night. They say the attack was foiled by government troops. Chad's military says 18 attackers were killed on the spot, and the body of one dead attacker was found Thursday morning in N'Djamena's streets. One member of the presidential guard was killed and 2 of his colleagues injured, according to the military. Chad's foreign minister and government spokesman Abdurrahman Kolumala told state TV that close to 10 suspects have been arrested as investigations to determine the reasons for the attack proceed. The attack took place after Chad's government reiterated an order first issued last month for French troops stationed in the country to leave by January 31. The new order followed remarks this week by French President Emmanuel Macron, who said African countries are ungrateful for France's role in helping to fight jihadist insurgencies. In response to Macron's remarks, Chadian President Mahamat Idriss Déby said that Chad is not benefiting much from military agreements with Paris and said the order for French troops to leave is irreversible and non-negotiable.
That was Muki Edwin Kinzika reporting from Yaoundé. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, January 9, 2025. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaru, and engineer, Jumbe Hamza, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.